Welcome to episode one of Studio 526M, the digitally authentic show of rants, raves, and reviews, all packed concisely for digitally minded students, faculty, or industry professionals. I'm your host, Professor Michael Harper, recording from my office, believe it or not, 526M, in the digital media department located on the beautiful Utah Valley University campus in Orem, Utah. And on this inaugural episode, I thought I would just take a few minutes in segment one and talk about what Studio 526M is all about, why I'm doing it, the goals I have for it, how I'm going to approach the show, and just all around tell you about what my hopes and expectations are. On the second segment, we're going to dive right in, and we're going to take a topic that is kind of, it's ruffling some feathers out there in the industry. It is this whole idea about digital magazines and that they're going to fail. Now, I don't believe that, but we're going to talk a little bit about what the article is about. There's a link to it in the notes. And well, you'll have to listen to segment two to kind of get the full skinny. But nonetheless, this will be a great first episode of Studio 526N, so hold on to your boots. We're about to begin. And last and of utmost importance is the sponsor of this first episode, and it is none other than the Digital Media Program here at Utah Valley University, of which I am part. And of course, we are the leaders in digital media education, and this program would not be possible without the generosity of the resources and the other things that I have in my office. So, shall we get started? It's now time for Newsstand. For our newsstand, well, Google has taken a huge leap forward. Yes, first off, Google Nexus 5 takes center stage and delivers a shot off the bow of Apple's flagship with the recent introduction of the iPhone 5S and 5C. Yes, it's a great product, but Google seeks to unseat Apple with the Nexus 5, not necessarily in technology, but most definitely on cost. Now, this new product comes with Android 4.4, aka KitKat, and brings a whole slew of new options, specifically the really cool thing with no-touch voice commands. That could be a major deal-breaker as people are looking possibly to switch from iPhone to Android. Very cool stuff. And in a twist, the Nexus 5 competes with Google's own Moto X device released this last summer. It's not that old. It's interesting to be sure because Google owns the Motorola device division, and that should be their really flagship piece of equipment. But LG and Google have actually been working together for quite a long time on the Nexus phone, and they continue to push out new product on a regular basis. So we'll have to see what happens with the Moto X as it gets updated in the future. And not to really outdo itself, but you know, right now Google is really pushing to bring products to the table that meet or beat Apple's. They are really working hard to take it to Apple, especially with the introduction of Chromecast earlier this fall, and it competes directly with Apple TV and AirPlay. That combo is really intended to be Apple's bread and butter in the home entertainment space, and Google says it's the easiest way to enjoy online video and music on your TV. We'll have to see how much more they push this. It's a great technology, and it's priced right at $35. So, you know, it's certain that Google is really taking it to the push, especially as automobiles come out. They're now talking about automobiles being run through Android. And, of course, that coincides with iOS for the cars set to be unleashed this next spring, 2014. Boy, big things afoot for both Apple and Android. And here we are at segment one of episode one, and I thought I'd just take a few minutes and talk about why I have decided to do Studio 526M as a show. And, well, I guess the best thing to first start off is that I've been teaching quite a few different classes over my 11-year time span here at the university. And I actually have a class that teaches audiobook development and podcasting specifically, and I guess I wanted, first of all, to have another show, because I used to have one previously with Mike Wisland and some of my other buddies. But just time constraints. We just could not continue on with it. We just had so many things going on. And I'm still busy. But I guess I decided that I needed to have another example for my students to at least watch me produce and develop and continue on so I could use in class. And number two, I just thought, gosh, you know, there are a lot of times, not only in that class, but other classes, that we get on some very crazy discussions on technology. And you need to know, and my students who are listening to this, they know that they can get me off topic very fast by bringing up some technology news item or something like that. And all heck breaks loose at the first part of class because they get me off and then I have to pull back and say, hey, we cannot spend the whole time on this, so we're going to have to talk about it another time, which is unfortunate because a lot of times we want to be in the moment and bring up some of these very valuable topics on technologies that sometimes may not be directly related to digital media, but others are. And it's unfortunate. I have to stick to a schedule. And so when do we get time to actually have that discussion? So one of the students, I don't even remember which class it was in, he said, you know what, Harper, you really need to do a show on this and call it whatever you will, but take the topics from class and maybe at least expound on it later on so that we can have at least your viewpoint and your opinion. I thought, God, you know what? That's a great idea. So I kind of let that kind of mature over the last year, and over the last couple months I've been prototyping the episodes, writing up all the documentation and everything the way that I want students to work on any production, and I share that out in class. But now I'm going to be able to take these topics and basically take the opinions, the ideas, you know, what I think is happening in the industry, the trends, and convey those to the students directly through the show. Now, that brings me up to the point of who is the audience. Well, obviously, what I just said is my audience is specifically my students. So the various classes I have, I may break out into some other courses that aren't mine, but primarily it's the courses that I teach, and I want to get certain information out to my students, and so they are going to listen. Now, that does not preclude anybody else that's out there from listening. It could be my colleagues here, other faculty members at other programs in the country, and of course, other students in programs very similar to the digital media program here at Utah Valley University. So it's, again, directly to students that are studying digital media or like fields, and they may find the information valuable. I guess the second part of that is, because we have students that are learning a lot of these, not only the trends, but the technologies and the ideas, a lot of professionals might find it valuable too. So that's going to be a tertiary audience that can potentially glean information and participate with the students once we get the blog up online, et cetera. So I want my students, you guys, those who are listening to this from my classes, to know that I care enough to take the time to not only build a show that I can use as an example, but also to share my feelings on topics that you're bringing up in class, because I respect you guys, and you guys have great things to say. Unfortunately, we just can't take all the time in class. Maybe, who knows, we may end up having a Studio 526M, open session every couple weeks, kind of like Thor did on Thor's Thursday, where we just bring up topics and spend time in a room talking about them. I don't know. But at least on the show, I can expound upon certain things. So anyway, that's my goals for the show. It's gonna change over the next couple, probably over the next five episodes, as I finalize with my prototypes that I did previous to this one. The framework for the show has been set. I feel satisfied with that. And I teach that in class, so you guys will be able to look at the documentation, which I'm going to post the documentation in the feed so anybody can pull that down and look at it and see how that I've, you know, organized everything. But I may have some structural adjustments still to go through as I take it over the next couple, three episodes. And definitely by the time we get to the fifth episode, I'll have everything ironed out and we'll stay consistent from there and beyond. I am here in my office, so you know what? It is what it is. We'll probably have faculty coming in and out, doors outside, even though I've got things closed up. It gets pretty noisy in here once in a while. We are a digital media department after all. And so you might hear people outside talking, whatever. I'm in my office. I've tried to soundproof it as much as I can. I'm going to have the blinds open, and if you look at my branding, you'll see the blinds on the pod cover, and that's basically mimicking what I'm doing right here, so that the students can actually watch me record through that glass. Students passing by, they may be digital media students, they may be computer science students or information technology folks. It doesn't matter. But nonetheless, it's mimicking my pod cover, and I'm here. So someone may knock on the window, I might have to respond. So it's a little bit organic as we go along, but don't expect, it's not meant to be studio quality. It should still sound nice, and we'll do everything that we can to make it nice. But I'm not going to spend huge amounts of extra time sweetening this and sweetening that. It is what it is. So just take it from that point of view. I guess lastly is I'm just trying to have a lot of fun. I really enjoy what I do as a faculty member here in the digital media program at Utah Valley University. It is my dream job. I've been out in the industry. I still continue to work and do consulting and other things like that. But I love being here. We have a fantastic department. We have excellent students. We've done a lot to help make the program, competitive with even some of the premier programs in the country. Even though we don't have the resources and the money, we still continue to win awards and do things with very little, and people are blown away by what our students are capable of doing. And so I just love it. So that's what it is, guys. Studio 526M, that's where we're headed. And I hope you really enjoy your time listening. And feel free to give me feedback from the blog when that's up. And we'll go from there. Yes, it's now time for termology, and reflect upon a term that I think all digital media students, specifically my digital media students, need to know. So let's consult the black book. I carry this around everywhere I go and make notations. And the other day I happened to be reading an article, and it's not that this is the first time we've probably heard this, but the term connective media. Well, I'm going to read to you what this individual said, and just really quickly expound on it. This individual said that it's mobile, specifically, fragmented, and endlessly malleable technology or content, in this case, that makes everyone a media creator as well as a consumer. Gosh, you know what? He's absolutely right. Think about it. Everything that we do, whether it's Facebook or Twitter or even programs like Yelp, especially programs like Flipboard 2.0, where we're able to publish our own digital magazines or curated magazines as we have it. We have one, Studio 526M magazine. I mean, think about it. We are connecting content endlessly, not just consuming it. So next time you think about posting something online, are you really creating connective media? And on to segment two we go. Well, this is actually a fill-in from my prototype. I had a different topic, and since I'm redoing my episodes, now that I've got my prototypes all done for the show framework, I thought I would throw this new topic in because it just really struck a chord with me. Now, we're not going to have time to just lay everything out. I'm posting this in hopes that you students will kind of take my passion behind this and some of my points. I'm going to get pretty passionate here, okay? So beware. I want you to take the article link, and I want you to go and review it for yourself, and I want you to think about what's being said here. This is specifically for my students that are in the Immersive Authoring 1 class, where we've been going over iBooks, and next semester we'll be going over InDesign with Mag Plus functionality. And so anyway, for those who aren't in those classes, you should still at least get on this topic, because there is a lot in this space that's going on. First of all, this is a article that came from GigaOM. The title of it is Why Tablet Magazines Are a Failure. Boy, that caught my attention real fast. The article was written by this John Lund. He's a guest contributor. I have no idea who he is, what his background is, but here's a summary. Dedicated magazine apps for tablets may look good, but I fear that they're headed straight to oblivion. Man, those are fighting words if I've ever heard them. I read through the article and I felt kind of like, wow. Not sure he's grounded in reality on some of what he says. You know, I'm not sure that this author, and definitely those who made comments, and you'll have to read through them and see if you agree with me on this, but there are people in the comments and the author again, I don't think they've ever developed a digital magazine. I don't think they've ever looked at the tools and how the process goes at all. And as you've seen in the Immersive Authoring 1 class students, you can't just take your magazine and take it and port it straight over. Those days are, they never were really here. If you were taking something from InDesign, for example, or Quark, and sending it over to a PDF file, that was not a magazine. That was a digital version of a print one, but that was not a digital magazine. It doesn't count. I don't think it counts. Today, taking a digital magazine, you either create it from scratch, just as a digital magazine. If you're now taking it from the print version and going over, you have to completely change what you're doing. It does not just port over. In the case of Mag Plus that we're going to be going over in the spring, you have to rebuild everything if you were going to do that. You have A and B layers and Mag Plus, and you have to reset and rebuild and just completely retool and replan. This idea that just somehow you're porting it over is not part of the process. So I feel like a lot of people are just completely out of the loop on this one. You know, he talks about apps and how many people are downloading so many apps, or, you know, he says that there's 41 apps on smartphones per user, and that, you know, out of that, they're only using like, you know, 7 or 8 a day. And, you know, he talks about Facebook and YouTube and things like that. I'm not, you know, he tries to present numbers here, and I don't like how he's presented the numbers, because I feel like they're really not grounded in reality. There, I said it. excuse me. There was a spot in here called antiquated monoliths that I thought I would just kind of hone in on. And let me read just a small piece for you, and then just, I don't agree with what he says specifically. And I could go on for a half hour just on this section, but he says, when I nevertheless managed to find the time to open up an iPad magazine, I feel as if I'm holding an outdated media product in my hands. Okay, he continues, that's ironic because these apps tend to be visually appealing with interactive graphics, embedded videos, and well-crafted navigation tools. But the gorgeous layout that works so well in print gets monolithic, almost scary, in its perfectionism on the iPad, and I find myself longing for the web. He says, the web is messy, but far more open, more accessible, and more adaptable to me, my devices, and my needs. What? How many of us go to the web to have a magazine experience? Let me just throw it that direction. We don't. How many of you go to those articles and say, hey, I'm having a magazine experience? They are two different things. Two different experiences. They should be treated differently. I like the web, but let me throw out something. Why are apps so powerful? There's been a lot of studies that have not only just suggested, but they've pretty much proven if there's an app available, take CNN.com, for example. If there's an app available, people will 9 times out of 10 go to the app rather than look at it on the web browser, on a tablet, for example. Because the experience, the organization of the content, the usability of it, everything, they don't want to look at it in a browser. I don't want to look at it in a browser. I have the ability to, you know, take the content as a designer and a developer and make it the way I want. I want it to look a certain way. I want to create a certain experience. On the web, that can be very difficult, considering all the different browsers and all the different technologies that we have to keep track of. So I don't get his point, and I don't agree with it. I just don't agree with it at all. Another portion of this is where they're talking about circulation numbers. Take, for example, he says Game Informer magazine, almost 8 million in print circulation. And then he says digital replica. Well, there's the first problem. It's not just a digital replica, as I just explained earlier. There is no such thing as a digital replica in a magazine. If it's a PDF file, it's not a digital magazine. It's a digital version of the print magazine, right? And then he says, you know, that there's almost 3 million of those for Game Informer magazine. But we're left here not knowing how long they've had this digital version compared to the print version. For all I know, the Game Informer magazine could be 10 years old, and it took 10 years to get 8 million, and they've only had the digital version for 6 months, 7 months, even a year. Having 3 million in a year? That's amazing. Anyway, you can look through the numbers. My problem with it is digital replica paid circulation. That's just a complete sham of a title for looking at the numbers. You know, the other side of this is just this idea that he says, evidence of success for standalone iPad magazines is even more difficult to find. The grandest attempt to make this new publishing platform work, News Corp Daily's iPad app, closed after 2 years of operation. The Daily only costs 99 cents a week, but with just a little over 100,000 subscribers at last count, it couldn't break even. Well, take Wall Street Journal. Or New York Times, let's use that one. How many people are subscribing to paid content through the browser? Bzz, basically none. How many of you students are subscribing to New York Times or anyone else that's charging for premium content through the browser? Bzz, I can pretty much guarantee zero of you are doing that. This idea that, you know, they couldn't make it. The Daily was an experiment. It was something that they were trying out. There's a lot of experimentation going on. In class, we're talking about a lot of that experimentation. In Immersive Authoring 2 next semester, we're going to be reviewing the first couple, 3 weeks, a lot of these magazines and asking what's going right and what's going wrong. There's a lot that's going right, and there are areas of major improvement that need to be made. The comments of this, they were all over the place. You need to go through and really digest them. Some of them are just hilarious, and you're wondering what these people are smoking. Others made some very good comments. And I will just end by saying that when we're developing magazines through tools like MagPlus, again, we don't just take the print version and recreate it. We review what our goals are. And our goal as user experience designers is to create a unique experience that is valuable and that is something that people want to come back to over and over again. It's repeatable because they enjoy it. So it means that we have to change directions and think about how we're building this stuff. And the tools there are really allowing us to do a lot of unique things, and they're powerful. And so look at the comments here, look at the good and the bad, and then ask ourselves, and when we get into next semester, what can we do to find a path that suggests that tablet magazines are the future rather than the failure? Why can they succeed? Because they ultimately can succeed in a great way. If they fail, what's going to happen to print? Print's already struggling. So we're just not going to be left with anything. I don't think the web in this case is the savior. I don't think it's even the solution in its totality. There can be elements of it. And this connectivity thing, yeah, there's some of that too. But anyway, I'll leave that with you. I just want you to think about it and about how it can be utilized in the future. And how we can make magazines a resounding success and not a failure. Because these guys don't give any solutions. They don't give anything. There was really no bright spot in the article. And that's probably the biggest problem I had with it. There was no really great opposite side that said where they are succeeding. Because there are wonderful areas where it is succeeding. Anyway, there you go. You can see I'm passionate about it. Expect this in the other articles or the other segments and the other episodes that I have. That's just how it goes. Well, that does it for the inaugural episode of Studio 526M. Once again, I am Professor Michael Harper from Utah Valley University in the Digital Media Program. And next time, we're definitely going to make some changes into the show a little bit. And as I get my system finalized and worked out, I'll be sharing a lot of that on the blog as that also gets put up. But until next time, this is the Professor from Studio 526M.